Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With the Baker's Plus card, it's easy to get lower than low prices. For the win! Earn fuel points on every purchase and save up to $1 a gallon at the pump. The Baker's Plus card. All you do is win. Big, big savings. Sign up now at bakersplus.com and start saving. Baker's. Fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your favorites with the Buy 5 or More Save $1 Each sale. Simply buy 5 or more participating items and save $1 each with your card. Baker's. Fresh for everyone.
And check this out. Bruce Kulick's water. Wow. I'm telling you, I'm impressed.
Hi, this is Bruce Kulick, and you're listening to Cobras and Fire Rock Podcast. Rock's not dead. It's hiding, and you found it right here. Welcome to Cobras and Fire. Welcome back to Cobras and Fire. My guest, Bruce Kulick. Is it Kulick?
As long as you know me, I'm okay either way.
What's proper? Come on.
No, you know, my parents always said it as Kulick, but that was confusing for some people because they think it may start with the letter Q, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Like the one before you. But there's a K, and then, you know, you see famous director like Stanley Kubrick, and that's K, you know.
Yeah.
So, and John Corabi was infamous for always introducing me as Bruce Kulick, like plural, yeah. Because it's cool licks on the guitar.
Oh,
and then,
that's good.
And then I developed, of course, my main kind of, even for the fans, I've had it for a very long time. My first internet AOL address was Bruce Kool, K-O-O-L, you know, cool. So, I don't know, you know, right? Don't you, how do you like to say it? This is my wife.
Cool.
Lisa.
Kulick.
Kulick. Yeah. You see, so, you know. But as long as you know who I am, that's what still blows my mind, really, that people know me. So
yeah, you're the first person from KISS I've ever talked to. So
okay.
If I start shaking or getting nervous, you know,
you'll be fine.
Okay.
I'll keep you relaxed.
All right. Appreciate that. Well, one of the questions I've always wanted to ask you is, do you ever worry that one day you're going to walk off stage to see Ace Frehley and Mark Farner waiting for you?
No, I mean, and I get the point of the question.
Like, but a headstock busted off of Les Paul.
Well, well, you know, both of them I have met, and in a sense, I've worked with both of them.
Yeah.
You know? Mark was, who of course, I wouldn't exactly say I took his Grand Funk gig because he was also the main lead singer, even though Don Brewer sings many of the Grand Funk hits as well. But I did some work with him at the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. And the first one, because he was involved with this guy, David Fischoff, the promoter of that. And he managed Grand Funk for that Bosnia Live record and during the end of the last years that the original Grand Funk was together, 97, 98. So when I got invited to do the camp in 2005, I guess it was, I remember the call from David was very stressful for me because he was very much close with Mark Farner, okay, and not very close anymore with Don Brewer. And he knew I was in Grand Funk, and he saw that as like I have, you know, like I'm a Mark Farner backstabber, he said to me, of which my reaction was pretty clever. I said, like, ouch, oh, let me take the knife out of my back. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
You know, I said, and I was very clear with David, that if you're going to hire me for your camp, you're hiring me because I was the lead guitarist of KISS for 12 years.
Sure.
Not because that my current gig is Grand Funk Railroad. Not that I don't, you know, it's not as if I don't take Grand Funk seriously or don't do a terrific job. And by the way, now it's been 17 years
of
Grand Funk. But I thought it was odd that he said it. So he said, I got to make sure it's okay with Mark. And I said, please do. I'm a big fan of his.
Sure.
You know, and then when the camp came around that Mark was against that also, I actually had a talk to him. Because I could tell he was kind of acting very not cool with me, you know.
Yeah.
So I introduced myself and I told them that I was a fan and that my brother actually recorded on his record because of Dick Wagner, who was the famous guitar player who we lost a few years back. He used to play with Alice Cooper and
yeah,
even did absolutely work with you know, Ezra knew him and he worked with Kiss even. Okay, but Dick Wagner is a tremendous guitar player of the Lou Reed album. And Dick Wagner produced Mark's record and knew my brother because they worked together when Steve Hunter, the other guitarist of that duo for the you know, the Alice Cooper and also for that Lou Reed album, the live record, mm-hmm. Which is kind of what Bob and I like to do, you know, when we work together, you know, dueling lead guitars, you know. So Steve Hunter couldn't be involved with an Alice Cooper tour and invited my brother to do the Australian leg of Alice Cooper. Now, this is back in the, God, I guess, boy, it was definitely before my Kiss years. So it was either late 70s or early 80s, okay? So he asked my brother to be the other guitar player for Mark Farner because he was going to use some session-type people. And Mark Farner gave my brother a gift, which for a couple of New York Jewish guys was kind of weird, mm-hmm. but actually, you know, in the big picture, a very cool gift, an antique gun, handgun. No. It wasn't really functional. At least it wasn't like, here, you need to register this. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I gave him a gun.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Mark being a, you know, definite Michigan, people from Michigan, yep. a gun, you're born with a gun. You know, yeah. oh, we got a baby. Here's your gun. You know what I mean? It's just yeah. part of the state and the way people live here, hunting. Mm-hmm. It's not so much about the First Amendment. It's all about, you know,
absolutely.
The Second Amendment.
Second Amendment.
Second Amendment. Thank you. First one was freedom of speech. Anyway, which I'm
I like
definitely
doing
plenty of that. Yeah. But you get what I mean. So when I told him that I remembered it and that we thought it was the coolest thing, even though, you know, we're a bunch of New Yorkers, you know.
Softened
that
up a little bit.
He just lit up, you know. And then when I told him, I said, hey, I'm here for you. I'm a fan of your music and your band. And, you know, it's just a gig for me, you know. And anything, if you need someone that knows the songs, if you're going to perform, please, you know. So, yeah, it was like that.
All right.
And then my bonding with Ace was pretty easy. I never really met him. I don't remember really meeting him or spending any time with him prior to Unplugged.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, Unplugged, knowing that we're going to perform on a very high profile thing, you know,
yeah.
TV Unplugged, and that they were going to bring him out to, of course, just perform, you know, Peter and Ace would just perform with Paul and Gene, but that we'd all perform together. I realized, all right, you know, I got to look at this as like, let's make this great. And I remember at the time I was working with a company called Tech 21 or Sans Amp. And they used to make these, they were really early in the game of little devices that could sound like a real amp, but it isn't. It was like,
I know, yeah, and I'm familiar with the piece.
And also they made a version for the bass that was also like a DI box. So knowing that we had to play true acoustic guitars and that would
You were the first guitar player I ever saw endorsed the Sonic Maximizer.
Right? Yeah, and that was a company that I liked what it did, even though I don't think BBE, which is the name of the company, mm-hmm. went on to any great heights, even though they probably still exist. But they were doing some interesting things then.
Yeah,
but
sorry.
Tech 21, yeah. I did have their little, you know, like pedal, which is called the Classic now, which they still sell after they reintroduced it. And that thing was incredible. But they had a version of the bass driver that's before they even made an acoustic device. But the reason why I shared it with Ace and we started to talk a lot, of course, I talked to him about the Epiphone he was going to mm-hmm. use and everything. At the time, he was doing some Epiphone models. That was maybe before his big years with Gibson, because, of course, subsequently,
a lot of
things with the custom show. We, you know, if you're going to take the solo in a song, typically a guitar player live, and you said you're a player, you know, you usually step on a, you know, an overdrive or a boost pedal, something that's going to bring you above. And bring up the sound because your rhythm sound
the
is
level
different from your lead sound. You don't usually keep the guitar at 5. All right, here's my solo. I turn it up to 10 because the guitar on 5 on the volume doesn't sound the same.
Right.
It doesn't sound right. So I told him, look, they're giving us these pedals. They're DI boxes, but here you go with a boost. So when you do your solo, step on it. You know? And he dug it. He got it right away. And I remember I just found the picture recently when I was going through photos for the website. That Sans Amp took a picture even back then, and it had from one of the tech guys, you know, a piece of tape on it. Paul, Gene, Ace, Bruce, you know, because we all were equipped with them. It's funny, the company was so tight back then. It was like, we need them back. You know what I mean? I had to give them back. I did. So anyway, Ace and I got along then. And more recently, my biggest memory, even though I did go to see him when he introduced produced one of the records at the Grammy Museum in LA. I got tickets to go see him, and we got to take a great photo that the fans love. But there was a cruise. This is pre-Kiss Cruise. Mm-hmm. The first cruise that Grand Funk ever did, and hopefully we'll do more, was a Legends cruise, and Ace was one of the acts. So on that cruise was Peter Frampton, America, Greg Allman. You know, so it's one of those. It's not just one band, you know, mm-hmm. like the way the Kiss thing is. Of course, they have featured guests and stuff, but Ace did a set, and we got to see that. He got to see me with Grand Funk. And I'll never forget it. It was so funny. We really enjoyed the Ace set, of course, because yeah. we got to see him without, you know, it was like in there's a few different venues on that boat. And this was like they turned it into a club. It was like the ice rink, right? So we got to watch from the side, and I filmed some stuff. It was really cool for me because I was like, oh, that's how we play Deuce. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, so I learned something. But after the show, you know, I really enjoyed it. I knew some of the guys in the band. And when he saw Grand Funk, he was like, the lead guitar should be louder. And now granted, Ace was the loudest thing in his thing. Yeah. I mean,
he dominated. I've seen him
guitar. Funny. Yeah. So you know, yeah. I can't do that with Grand Funk. Grand Funk's a loud band for what we do.
Yeah.
Okay. But I know the sound guy brings me up when it's my solo, but I'm not going to be the loudest thing all the time.
Sure.
Like Aces. You know. So, and again, healthy relationships with the guys. And the funnier question would have been, how was it touring with Mark St. John?
Oh.
Because we actually went together.
That's right, actually. Well, what was that like?
Very odd, but yeah. I was in a great place mentally.
You played a little bit on Animalize, right?
A little bit. And I wasn't aware that he may have been having a health problem until they called me and said, we'd like you to fill in for Mark. Now, it may only be 2 weeks and he'll join us in Europe. That didn't happen. I did the whole 6 weeks. But if he's well enough, he'll join us in America and then we'll see what happens. You know, that was kind of the scenario. Not laid out necessarily in the beginning like that, but that's what happened. So once Mark was well, he came out on the road. What's the ice hockey reference?
Penalty box?
Oh, the Nancy Kerrigan and...
Right. And Tanya.
Harding.
There's a new movie about
that. Oh, Tanya.
Yeah. So my joke back then was, we got along fine. I actually respected him as a player. I didn't think he was right for Kiss.
Yeah.
Because he was actually too progressive, kind of, too fusion jazzy mm-hmm. for Kiss. But I like that kind of playing, so I admired him. But we used to warm up backstage and jam backstage, okay? And my attitude was, look, I don't have a choice in this. All I could do is the best I can do.
Yeah.
And obviously, if he's fighting for the gig, he's gotta do better than me. This is like the last game of the World Series, seventh game, and you're not in your home, you know, city, okay? And what are you going to do? You know what I mean? And it's not that he played bad, but I know he kind of tried to perform maybe above what Gene and Paul expect.
Okay? Sure.
He was literally lifting his guitar over his head and spinning around and doing some things that I could see in time would have maybe worked for him as the guitarist of Kiss, but I think it really kind of didn't make them comfortable, Gene and Paul.
Okay.
And then his tone, he chose a head that he wanted to use, where I was using one of the Kiss Marshall heads that was modified that, you know, I know they liked.
Right.
You know? So they sent them home after he finally, you know, kind of, it was really weird. There's very little information out there, so I'm going with what I remember because I was there. But there's very few other people that are collaborating it, okay, that they let him try, not immediately, you know, but they let him try the first half of the show, and then I did the second half of the show. Right. That's pretty weird.
Yeah, that's really weird.
I mean, that's like a Broadway play, and like, all right, acts two and three have the other person, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And then they let him try the second half of the show, where I started the show, and then they let him try an entire show, although I was completely ready to go on stage, mm-hmm. just in case it wasn't like I was in my travel clothes. And that's when they sent him home, and he emptied his mini bar. There you go. So that's the Mark St. John story.
You know, Kiss came into my life like in 77, so I have kind of a memory as a fan of all those changes. You know what I'm saying? I think you kind of benefited. I think Vinny took the brunt of the "That's Not Ace Frehley." Now, maybe I wanted to hear what your side of that was. Like when you came into Kiss, I just don't recall at that point they had gone from Vinny to Mark St. John, and then you came in.
Right.
And it was almost like a silent change. It wasn't really, you know, a big deal at that point. Did you get a lot of Ace fans that were, or were you basically welcomed?
A lot of confusion, but I was not unwelcome. But confusion, oh my God. the only newsworthy publication that did explain that I was the guitarist was Kerrang, because they were very quick to press. Mm-hmm. Kerrang is a UK publication, a great one, by the way. And they were there to cover us immediately. But I remember there was a picture of me from my Blackjack days, which was not that long before that. They didn't have a Good Rats picture because that was my gig kind of prior.
Yeah.
So they had Mustache from the back of the second Blackjack album. That was the band with Bolton, Michael Bolton. And it said Mark St. John ill, Bruce Kulick replacing. You know, I have the clipping. And so I guess – and then England was pretty hip to – that's where we started, to that magazine. So I don't think there was a lot of confusion there. As we moved on throughout Europe, I think it was worse in America, to be honest with you. Because, you know, Circus, Hit Parader.
They're like Rolling a three-month delay at the time, too.
Yeah. So nobody knew who was playing guitar. Mm-hmm. I still have fans because it seems like the legend of the non-makeup Kiss is growing.
It really is.
Yeah. And some of that's age and some of it's just, well, they've been doing what they've been doing the same. So what was different years ago? And it makes that more interesting. Yeah. And then all those people come out of the woodwork and there they are saying, yeah, I didn't know who I saw. I mean, I just read this recently a few times. Okay. I didn't know who was on stage. I knew it wasn't, you know, he starts mentioning, you know, Ace, and I didn't think it was Mark. Didn't look like him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then even the you know, the merchandise, the tour book was confusing. I wasn't on any of the t-shirts yet. The tour
eventually, though, right? There are Animal Eyes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Eventually, I think I might have made it into one, but if it was anything from the album, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
But the book had, when they finally flipped the picture of Mark, that he wasn't in the book anymore, they changed that page to me, but the second picture was a picture of his hand, and his hand at the time, he always, I mean, physically, he was a lot different from me, but his fingers were like five thumbs, and you know,
because of the thing.
I don't even know if they were swollen because of his illness at the time, or they just, that's his hands, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
But
Gene kind of has fat fingers.
You know, yeah, yeah, we're all built different, but you know that whenever anyone shows me that tour book, I go, check this out. I'll sign here, but look, I put my hand right there, and I go, look at the fingers. It's Mark St. John's hand. So it was weird.
Did you know Vinny? Did you ever get to know him at all?
Now, my only time I knew Vinny, being, you know, growing up in New York, obviously, I met a lot of them,
mm-hmm.
of the people that are related to the Kiss world. And he was from Connecticut, but that, you know, that's tri-state area, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. So
like New York. So I remember he worked at a guitar shop on 48th Street, which I'm very, very sad about the fact that it's not what it was anymore.
Yeah.
They just got rid of all the stores, Mandy's Music. I mean, I used to see my heroes there.
Mm-hmm.
I actually would see Keith Moon while I'm testing out a Marshall amp to buy, or Leslie West. And it was really magical. And you knew that Hendrix bought his guitars there. You know what I mean? I didn't run into him, but like, you get what I mean.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the stores he worked at, the We Buy Guitars, so I knew him from the shop, and we used to chat. And I knew he was a professional player, and he did dabble with a few known. I think he worked with, by then he might have even worked with Felix Cavalieri already, that treasure thing.
You know? Yeah.
But and that was it. I knew he got the gig, even though I knew that he was another one that they couldn't decide. But I wasn't as privy to Kiss news, even though my brother sometimes got me some information because of his relationship with Paul and Gene. But I didn't get as smart as what was really happening until I actually joined the band. That's why sometimes people ask me questions about Vintage Kiss, and I'm like, I don't have a clue.
Sure.
You know, why would I know?
So you never borrowed Vinny any money?
And now, by the time I got into Kiss, of course, there I was, Gene and Paul traveling in one limo, in England, and Eric and I generally in the other one. Eric would tell me some funny Vinny stories. And that's that. Your comment just made me think of that.
Yeah.
But since it didn't happen to me, that I can't.
Well, he's coming out of hiding, you know. And
No, I'm thrilled about it. People
if you owe you money, you can show up and
No, he doesn't owe me money.
Yeah, the $20.
I think the way Eric used to tell me crazy stories about, like, yeah, let's go to dinner. Come on, let's go to dinner. You know, and then it turned out, oh, man, I don't have my wallet or something, even though I'm pretty sure with Kiss, you could just sign for the stuff anyway.
Yeah.
You know, but Eric would make kind of like the reference of Vinny, you know, kind of doing some shenanigans with him. But that could have been he was the new guy. He's going to stick it to Eric. I don't know.
Yeah.
But about the expo, wow, I'm very curious about it too, because here is a very talented. I've even quoted myself. It was picked up by Rolling Stone.
Oh.
The Howard Hughes of Kiss, you know. I mean, you couldn't have a more mysterious figure from the band, because most of the band does interviews. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't, you know, there's always a little side of someone you don't know. I mean, Gene blew the lid off of all that with his family jewels.
Sure.
People I knew that weren't even his fan, they didn't like Kiss, loved the show.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, that's the Gene, much more the Gene I know. Not the demon, not that character that he sells, not even the crazy businessman. You see how, you know, on the show, he was just like almost like comically hapless at times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That his whole family picked on him and made fun of him. Now, I'm not saying that.
Did you make fun of him?
Eric Carr used to take the piss out of him a lot. And Eric Singer has fun with him. He can take that kind of fun, you know. But I have to admit, I was I love that Gene was Gene. But, yeah, he got picked on in a funny way. But that would never happen in the press. And then he shows that whole side of himself on a television show, you know, which was why it was so successful. But, honestly, Vinny, there's nothing like that of him. You know, Paul shares his love of cooking mm-hmm. and his art. And even though there's probably a side of Paul that he does want to keep private, and he has the right to.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, he presents his love, his passions, and his things. You know, Tommy Thayer, you know, he's into golf, and he's a guitar nut like me. And Eric, you know, is into watches and cars. And
so Tommy doesn't have to wait for you standing off stage with a broken headstock.
No,
yeah.
Okay. No, you know, we get along very well.
That's actually good.
And but what do you know about Vinny except for some of the crazy press mm-hmm. that you've seen?
Some of that's misleading, yeah.
Yeah, and who knows, right? And even musically speaking, he could have been writing for years with people, and if he did live, you know, which supposedly lived in Tennessee, right? Lives in Tennessee with people because he's very talented. He could be collecting royalties with a hit that's under a pseudonym. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying I know that, but I'm just saying, like, what? You know, he really, outside of what I would call controversial press, you know, which he usually gave a positive spin to, from, you know, the court case with Kiss to, you know, the crazy stuff at his house that they talked about. He's always put a positive spin on everything. You notice mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping he can get out there and be whoever he is now and just express himself and share. He was important for Kiss. There's no doubt. And his talent can't be ignored. But here's a guy that actually could be really enjoying it or sharing it and embracing it. And I do,
mm-hmm.
my years.
Yeah.
Know? And I'm not saying his years were as long as mine, but they were in that period of time very, very strong. And then he had the reappearance by helping out with some great songs for Revenge. So this could be really exciting. Or somebody shows up and sues him. I don't know. You know what I mean? I know the promoter. I'm the one guy that really knows the promoter. And so there's
good guy?
Yeah. He's from the guy is not see like the Kiss all the years that I've been with Kiss and then my post years. Obviously in Kiss I didn't do any expos, of course. But as soon as I left, that was always a good source for me to meet the fans and, of course, talk about my product, interview, make some money,
mm-hmm.
and really get out there. And they're great events, no matter what. Obviously, the Kiss Cruise is like the biggest kind of version of that, if you know what I mean, especially being official. But these Kiss Expos that all the people who have survived, there used to be many more, but all of them, they're a lot of fun,
mm-hmm.
okay? And now I lost my thought because I got so excited about all the expos I've done.
Knowing the promoter.
Oh, knowing the promoter, yeah. Right. So then out of the blue, a newbie comes on the scene. Now, what I mean by somebody new is that it always was the same cast of people.
Oh, gotcha.
Who were dealers, and then they wanted to take it to the next step. Hey, why don't I just throw an expo? I know these dealers. I know that I get the table. Let me see if Bruce can do it. Let's see if Eric's available. I mean, Keith LaRue, who does the indie one, which is the biggest one, he works with Kiss. So the next thing you know, he's got Gene at it. He's got Paul at it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, which really broke that curtain that was always there, you know what I mean, that those guys didn't do it. I'll have Tommy there. I'll have multiple ones. You know,
right.
I bet he'll probably get Ace at some point. You see what I'm saying? He's never asked Vinny. Anyway, this guy, Derek, approached Peter, who's not an easy one to get either, and he figured it out. He wanted to do an LA Expo, just to give you the backstory. And I told him, you're crazy. Don't bother. Because I did one maybe, I don't know how long, 10 years ago. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was a disaster because LA is not a good city. LA is my lady, whatever. LA, there's too much going on in LA.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the strongest Kiss market.
Okay.
I'm not saying there aren't a million Kiss fans.
Today, sure.
But there's too much going on. Yeah. It's one of those cities, you know. And I told him, you're crazy. And keep in touch, but I wouldn't do it, basically, you know, if he could read between my emails.
Yeah.
It would be, I won't do it unless there's something else. You need something better than me. I'm not doing it. And then all of a sudden he said, I got Peter Criss. I said, I'm doing it. How could I not do it, right? Yeah. So we were really impressed. I did play with a very popular tribute band at that one. He did it completely differently. He did it at a studio. Raleigh Studio.
Yeah.
That's a film studio, a famous film studio, right? I mean, that's different. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Peter's kind of meeting the fans and everything had to be moved to this theater, which was probably terrific for the fans. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So instead of it being a hotel convention room or something odd, it turned into something kind of unique to be parking on a Hollywood film studio, a TV studio. So that went really well. Then he invited me to do the New York one. He was way over his head with that one. Again, he got Peter. Again, at an unusual place, even though it was a hotel. It was at the ballroom of a very famous hotel called the...
It was the Peninsula.
No.
Isn't it?
No.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. On Pennsylvania Avenue. By Penn Station, rather. Okay. Now, that hotel was famous in the big band era. It's been around since like the 30s or the 20s even, right? Mm-hmm. There was a separate room for him. We performed. The only problem is he forgot in New York. Forget about it. You know what I mean? You got to take care of business like real heavy duty. And the PA came an hour after our set was supposed to start.
Okay? Oh, okay.
So the monitors were there. So he did Q&A with people through monitors, which for the faithful, you know, 200 people in the front could still kind of hear him, but you can't perform that way.
Yeah.
Know? And anyway, you know, all the stuff's on YouTube, the performance that Lisa and I did, which was terrific. And we rehearsed, we did play a few songs together, my wife and I, Kiss songs, and the new single, right? Did we do our single once too?
Yeah, we did. No, we didn't do it.
We didn't do it.
We didn't do it in Indy.
Right, not in Indy, but we tested the waters in Indy, even though we were both sick with colds and it went well. We did a few songs and I did some other stuff. So we wanted to do that for Derek in New York. And that really was great. And then, of course, the tribute band, you know, the PA was there, of course, finally. But it went very well. Derek's problem in New York was just that it got a little over. Some of the events got overbooked, which was some, he claimed was some software snafu with the way he was booking the tickets. Then he tells me he's doing Atlanta with Vinnie Vincent. And I was like, oh, my God. Grand Funk was booked that weekend.
Yeah.
So even though he was saying, well, you could probably still make it, which in the end, actually, we got a gig on the day before I had a gig the day before.
Okay.
But I told him, you know, I don't want to do a three-peat, you know, and do this one. I think it's going to go great. I really hope the best. And actually, I did eventually mention, you know, my brother would be a really good guest, especially post-cruise now. So he did invite my brother. So I'm hoping the best. I saw where Gene came out about Vinny, and Vinny responded very kindly, which was, I thought was a good move. This should, you know, to me, Kiss is even though there's times when everybody gets in the sandbox and fights, you know, we've heard, you know, people, I've always taken the high road, and there hasn't been really much that I should complain about.
Sure.
Even when it came to the Hall of Fame, I know that Gene and Paul were fighting for me to be inducted along with Eric Carr and Eric Singer and Tommy Thayer. But that was going to be a losing battle, but I thought it was great, you know, for me to be a part of that. But I don't have much to complain about, you know, and so I don't need to go negative, but I think regardless of any of the issues that Vinny has had in the past with Gene and Paul and the band, I just see there's so much to celebrate from Lick It Up and Creatures and the songwriting that the whole thing could be a very positive thing. And I know that the promoter and him love the idea that we'll sell this. Did Vinny save Kiss? And then there goes the board, the Kiss boards, you know, and they can have that discussion. I think that discussion is valid to kick around.
As a fan.
Yeah, as a fan. Mm-hmm. When you're a fan, you want to talk about that. Just, I mean, Kiss fans are not that different from Star Wars fans. we went to see the movie with my family, and then I posted, what do you think? And you should see my Facebook just exploded. You know, look, I enjoyed the movie, but I can get how a diehard can pick it apart and say, this is wrong, or this doesn't make sense, or what do you mean she survived out in space? You know what I mean? Whatever. But that's true in anything. You can argue whatever you want. But,
she survived
in space. So let's see what happens in Atlanta. I cannot wait.
Yeah.
I have some really close friends that will be there. My brother, of course. I got other friends working there. And I want to be on speed dial that day, don't I?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I got to hear.
I'm not going to be there, but I'm definitely.
But I bet you know people that will.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And God forbid, I swear, it would be really tragic, of course, if Vinny didn't go or something really like kind of crazy happened. I think that would be stupid. Meaning, there was one time that there was the promoter got in trouble when there were supposed costumes that were.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And then it became a whole. You know, where deputies show up and, you know,
Kiss showed up to that expo.
I think they did. Yeah. It was a little odd to me, but I didn't know that they were also gearing up in time to do, you know, them celebrate their past and how those outfits, you know, got there or didn't, you know.
On that, how did you feel about the Rise to It video at the beginning there where they did that?
Well, I remember Larry Mazur, who was the manager then, who's still a very dear friend of mine, who I really like, he thought a little, you know, a connection to the past was not going to be a negative thing. And it was hardest for Eric Carr because he had a makeup character. So if they're putting on makeup, why isn't Eric putting, how would he put on the cat? He wasn't the cat.
Yeah.
I mean, if you fast forward that to the current band, I guess you could have Eric being put on the cat or Tommy putting on the edge. So I got it. And it didn't continue too much. It raised the question of, we still got it even without that. So I wasn't real negative about it, but you got to remember, I was always very sensitive to Eric's opinions and feelings about Kiss because he was in an unusual time period there. Although, you know, I was always, I had to give him a lot of respect for the fact that, well, he got in before I did, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he had certain really great experiences, you know, not only playing in makeup, but the Elder and some of the things he went through, we were excited.
That had to be weird for him. The first record is The Elder.
Oh, yeah. How about him changing his character at the last minute?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Before that.
Well, that was actually a good move. I saw.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't want him as the, what was he going to be?
A hawk or something?
Yeah.
The makeup was ridiculous.
Yeah. And that was wonderful. It's really interesting when you look back how at the time, you know, things are kind of wacky, but you know, things happen for a reason.
They're a fascinating band just to talk about.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Is that you and Eric in the video, though, like with the backs to the thing?
Yes.
Okay.
We were there, but of course we weren't really shown because it didn't make any sense.
Hot in the Shade, my favorite tour band.
Because who's in the smoking hall? This
it's my era. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Band was just firing all cylinders. You know, for the first time, you're digging out. See if you check a memory, like Deuce Got a Thunder was on that tour. I Stole Your Love. Those were kind of
Some of that had to do with Larry Mazur wanting to mix things up for us and suggesting things.
It's still a great mix of 80s stuff that you were part of, you know. And and the Crazy Nights would probably be like that tour just seemed a little flat. It was right before it, and
we were happy we had some hits, you know, especially in Europe. But I know that the band was wounded from Asylum coming down a notch, even though there's some great songs on it. It was a great record. So looking back, I mean, I've done some really in-depth discussions recently about certain tours and everything. It's some of the things aren't really clear. Like I did some interviews. I did an interview recently with John Hart's putting out a book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the you know security guy, and he was on the cruise. And it was so funny because of course I knew John, but like I didn't have a lot of like very vibrant memories of him, right? So then when we set up the interview with this guy that's helping him with the book, it was a three-way, you know, conference call. And I'm like, so, John, when actually did we work together? Because it's all, you know, that kind of side of it is a bit of a haze. And he goes, like, Crazy Nights. I'm like, holy shit. So I ran and got the tour book because I wanted to see if it, you know, like brought up anything, you know. And then it did, because it brought up some of the other people that traveled with us. So we were able to joke about some of those things and discuss those things. Some of the people from management and the other people that we hired and some of those I have better memories than John. And I was honest with John doing the interview that that whole Crazy Nights tour was, I guess, you know, to me, there was nothing extreme to remember. I remembered more the festivals over in Europe than the Crazy Nights because they were very big events. And we did the festival tour.
You know, do you still have that Radioactive symbol suit? You
know, I don't, but I know who has it, and it made an appearance at the New York Kids Expo.
Okay.
you know, this Uber fan, Mike, that I'm friends with, brought it there. And it's a long story how that all happened. When we used to give things to fans, and that fan named Fab Vinny, that was his name. Everybody knew Miss Fab Vinny, Vinny Gonzalez. And then years later, he has health problems, and he just goes, I got to get rid of this stuff. And then he winds up selling it all, which is like, the one guy you'd never expect to sell anything. You get what I mean? You know?
Sure.
And then he sells it all. And then, of course, you know, then it goes on the market. You know what I mean? That's like, that might have been even before eBay. Who knows? But anyway, this guy Mike wound up with it. So, but I was getting to something about John Hart.
Yeah.
You know, and my biggest recollection of John was there weren't a lot, except that as far as I was concerned, that tour was very smooth. And he knew of things that he had to deal with, you know, fires you had to put out with Paul and Gene. But I was Mr. Low Maintenance, you know, like my guitar tech. They used to joke with Mike Rush, who's called nicknamed Spike, who did continue to work for Kiss and all. Ironically, he works for Seeger now, which is like a little Grand Funk connection with Don Brewer and all. And they used to change the lyrics to Deuce and say, you know, he ain't working hard. He works for Bruce. But that's not a slam of me.
It's no,
like,
I know.
I know how to kind set up my guitars. You know, just tune the damn things. Most of them have Floyd Roses on them, the locking tremolos for those non-players listening. So the guitars are all. I take out my white ESP M1 or my banana guitar. Mm-hmm. It's in tune. You know what I mean? I don't have to touch it for 5 years. It's still in tune. you know what I'm saying? So Spike didn't have to do too much. So anyway, getting back to John and thinking of some of those tours, you know, there's highlights. And I know I did a retrospective on my website years ago.
That's great.
That would be my book. You know, and I know people have asked me about a book. More celebrate and take everybody through my whole career, but then when it comes to the Kiss years, to go through it kind of album by album, tour by tour, video by video, what I can remember.
Sure.
I can't remember.
Well, I'll buy it. You can get it.
Well, thank you.
There'll be one sale for certain.
There you go. We got a sale.
talk to publishers. Baco's got one.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
You know, we're talking about the Expos a little bit, but Kiss did their own Kiss convention, and technically that would be where you and I first met. I probably remember it a little clearer than you do.
So which one? We were at the Minneapolis one?
Yeah, okay. Not too far from, about an hour from there, I suppose. There was an incident, though, that I wanted to know if you remembered, because it involved you. Mm. A gentleman asked you a question in very rapid fire. You know where I'm going with this?
I think so, but go ahead and say it.
And it was, you know, three or four quick questions, and then the last one was, and how much did Kiss pay you at the end?
I was wondering, what your individual bank accounts contain in Bruce? wondering how much they originally hired you for and how your account has, grown since then, how it relates to your...
And you politely answered all of them. And I remember even like in the audience, when you responded, I was like, that was a little terse the way he ended that. But the guy, of course, your answer, I believe, was something along the lines of.
My brother doesn't know. I'm not going to tell you. Anyway, you know, when it comes to people's like money and stuff like that, it's really personal. It really is. I mean, I think you got some other good questions there, but the money thing's kind of stupid.
20 minutes, half hour goes by, and all of a sudden, like some in the middle of somebody else asking a question, you're like,
yeah, well, Bruce, I want to know what was so bloody stupid about my bloody question earlier.
Uh-oh.
No, real. I mean, for God's sakes, man.
Okay,
I just
what
asked
I meant to say.
Dad, your bank account, you told me my question was stupid.
I think he wants to come up here.
No, I think he just it took time for him to get really fucking mad.
I remember that it upset me because I don't even like it when a professional player that I know that I'm friends with asks me, so what does that band pay you? You know, what did you make? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there are times I definitely like to, if there's a buddy of mine in the industry that they're going to do something and say like, you know, they offered me this. How does that sound? You know what I mean? That I would give some advice, but I do find what people make to be a personal thing. And
I'm with you on that.
Yeah. And I guess it irked me only because what was always interesting about Kiss is that my salary was it changed through the years, and obviously it grew through the years, you know. But I also was aware of the bigger picture of it. Okay. Of Eric, and then I'd hear things about, you know, things in the past and what they went through, and I just felt like I probably could have framed that in a very
well. You answered everything leading up to it very polite.
Yeah.
It almost seemed like just like one of those moments.
Yeah. But I think it irked me only because it was one of those things that probably brought
stupid
up
question.
Some of my frustrations of. You know, you got to remember that if you Google me on internet and it drives me nuts, although my manager thinks it's funny or maybe a good thing, but it, you know, you can put in a performer's or an actor's name, you know, net worth, you know what I mean?
Oh,
and something
how
ridiculous
accurate
comes
is that
up.
Though?
It's not.
Yeah, that's. Just,
I mean,
how would anybody know? Like, there's not a place. For-
well, when it says things that I'm worth twice as much as someone I know that is loaded, okay, because they just bought a $2 million home, I feel like. What the fuck, right? You know, so it goes to that. And I remember exploding when I saw what it said about me. And I'm going like, I don't think I'd even be working if I had that money. You see what I'm saying? So I think when it comes to money, and yet some people will read it and believe it.
Sure.
And then say like, well, I'm going to his wedding. He's rich. I don't need to give him a gift. And they don't give a gift. And someone that can give a gift.
Yeah.
You get what I mean?
Sure.
So I think it's always awkward talking money. I know, I mean, I couldn't even tell you. I know with Gene and Paul, who are very well off, you know, they never talk about money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they act like as if they're just like, I'm not saying they act like a struggling band, you know, but I remember years where we're like, okay, so is anybody, where's the tech for our rehearsals? No, just bring your amp. You know what I mean? And I'm loading an amp in my car, you know, and that's not exactly rock star level, but, you know, Kiss is touring. I mean, Gene is touring right now, and I don't think he's got a big crew, if anything.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, it was those dates. So those guys were never flamboyant about, yeah, you want to stay at a good hotel. I'm not saying they don't travel comfortable, but they were never about, like, you know, having people around all the time or being, you know, but still when it comes to money. And someone wants to say something. I get irked even if they're asking about Grand Funk or something like that. You know, I don't like it. So yeah, I wish I could have handled it better.
So I'll skip past my question, which was how much is Grand Funk paying you to be here?
Right. Oh no, even my wife is sworn to secrecy. You know? Only my accountant knows.
Take a stand, so you think that you human hand.
quick question about fly-in dates, because I didn't really know they existed until maybe late 90s, early 2000s. I had a chance to spend some time with Kelly Keegi for an unrelated thing. And he would tell me that Night Ranger never practiced. So simple kind of gear question. What did you bring today that would be on stage? Just your guitars?
All right. So here's your other lesson. Okay. So what happened when I first joined Grand Funk, we were at the mercy of Backline, as we call it, through the promoter.
For people at home, that's all the
And all I'd have to bring is a guitar and a pedal board, which was a royal pain in the ass. Okay, because you're talking about flying, clothing, pedals,
because as opposed to touring with everything.
Right.
It's
if you go on tour for like a month or whatever, everything's on trucks and things or whatever. So in a very quick amount of time, I don't even think – I'm not positive it only took us a year – but maybe the first year was a struggle like that. Everybody just bring in their gear and then we plug into whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
We found an excellent backline company called Jonas, and they're based out of Indy, but they also have a company in Vegas. And we have three rigs of gear basically that can go meet us anywhere. Now, why three? Well, if you have a gig in the Midwest, you know, on a Saturday, on a Friday, let's say, and then on Sunday you need to be in Florida, the truck's not going to make it. The same truck that finished that gig. So then the B rig would meet you in Florida. And then if the next day there was a gig in Vegas or California, the C rig from Florida would meet you there.
Sure. That's all planned out in advance. They're heading to the
destination. I have guitars with all that. I have pedal boards with all that. Okay. So in other words, things are set up very conveniently. And the funniest story related to that, which isn't Grand Funk, but of course, I fly out of LAX often to meet the band. We all fly from where we live, which is all over the country. And I remember knowing the sound guy. I didn't realize he worked for Rick Springfield. And Rick is very successful. You know that. And he's on the same kind of circuit as us, where he does a lot of the casinos and venues. And there were like 20, maybe more, flight cases outside for the airline to grab, right? So I knew the sound guy. And we hooked up at the lounge in the hotel. I mean, in the airport. I go to, what are you doing with all the gear? Well, you know, we got a gig here, and it's all got to go. You know, this is what we take to do our gig. And I'm like, we need a backline company. Here you go. And I give them, the information for Jonas. And
so it's all they do. Huh?
Yeah, I'm very popular with the people who own Jonas. Okay.
That
was a huge account they got. And they've never looked back. Okay. So most bands, except when you're a Kiss or you're at that top tier doing those gigs where you have trucks and a crew, you have backline. Okay. So what did I bring? I have a little pouch in that bag over there. I'll bring to soundcheck, which has some tools, because even though our road crew guy has the tools, I like to do it myself.
Okay.
I may have some strings in my bag. Okay. And some guitar picks. That's all I got to bring. Thank God. Now, when I go do the cruise, let's say, which I call more like a one-off. Okay. Or if I go to Norway and Finland to do clinics and then perform a little, or do an expo and perform with a band, I have to fly a guitar. So then I will fly a guitar, not multiple guitars.
Okay.
I've seen guys for one-offs take multiple guitars. Yeah. I don't know why, but they carry like a double gig bag or something. They'll be seeing a chiropractor when they're in their 40s, I'm sure. and I fly a guitar. That's convenient. I always fly great guitars. Usually I'm always taking an LTV by ESP that are, I don't want to take a $5,000 guitar. You know what I mean? I'm take an affordable guitar that, God forbid, the airline ran it over with a truck. I'm okay. And I will take pedals. I can fit them all in a small, like something like your man bag or something. I'm real old school about
Merce.
It. Merce. I just plug them in. And I won't take an amp. I mean, I've heard stories of George Lynch, and God bless him. I know he's great with tone, loves gear. And he made like a guy in Australia. He flew his head. He had an actual 100-watt head he wanted. The guy had a heart attack with it because how expensive it was to fly that around Australia. He went nuts. But you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's practical, and then there's, the obsessive fan, Or Richie Kotzkin now has a device that has it all in a little, pedal thing. He's got his name on a Tech 21 product.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called. The fly rig, I think it's called. So, you know, nowadays, now these guys with inner ear, they don't even use gear. Everything's like, you know what I'm saying? There's ways to really reduce the stress of that kind of stuff. The hardest thing is just having the airlines get you where you want to go.
Yeah.
Mel had to take a chartered plane, which I'm sure cost the band a ton of money compared to a commercial flight, because the airport's closed in the Michigan city where he lives because of a storm that came. We would have to cancel the gig if he didn't get here somehow.
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing. It's just getting there.
Yeah, because you guys aren't all like, you're living apart, right? You're coming from different areas.
Yeah. We're all in different states. We have Carolinas. We have Nebraska. We got Florida. We got Michigan and California.
I think I'm more of your mindset, though, because I never got out of bars. What I would take got less and less and less. I used to do 3 guitars, then mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I can probably go with that. I bet you I won't break a string tonight. I'm only bringing one. You know,
that's bad. No, I've done some good articles for like some magazines. I remember one for Premier Magazine that was like being prepared for the sessions and the gig. And it was always about having extra stuff.
Yeah. Always. But yeah, you know, whatever. You know, I've also been that even at that low level, you get drummers who refuse to share a drum kit at a bar. You know, it's like, you know, there's a 45-minute changeover.
No, I've always, right. And like this Australian tour I did in May, and I did gigs with a band from Australia. Sisters Doll, they're called Young Guys. But the other band was John Reagan and other really talented players, the drummer that was in Skid Row. And the band was called Four by Fate, a new group.
Isn't Howarth in that too? It's kind of like some of the guys.
Todd Howarth and what's our drummer's name that we love? The Skid Row drummer?
The Rob Afuso?
Yeah, Rob Afuso. Okay. Yeah, I saw the last name in my brain. I didn't see his word. And then they had this other guitar player, Pat, who's got the studio, is really talented, really great band. They were super talented. I loved it. Did we change drums? I think that's all we changed, but we shared the gear. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way to make it work.
Yeah.
So the little rub was just the gear, the drum gear. And I think there was one gig where we had no choice. Couldn't change the gear. You know what I mean? Yeah. Couldn't change the thing because the stage was not very friendly. So, yeah, that's what you do. It's about the music, not about the equipment, the tones in your hands, you know that.
Yeah. I'm not a player at your level, so I have a very basic setup. I used to use a lot of pedals, and that's what got.
Yeah.
I was always the rhythm guitar player in the band anyway. Right. I'm like, you deal with that. You know,
it's pedals are a disease that I haven't been cured. I've been cured of the guitar.
Oh, they're fun to play with, but at a gig, I just found it like a distraction, and someone would go and that'd have them take me 45 minutes to figure out what happened, you know? And it's just
one of those carry-on bags, because my wife doesn't always travel with me, of course. So I said, no, we should bring that, and then you'll have it. We can put some stuff in there. And I'm like, well, what was in it? Of course, pedals. And they had like the go-to pedals that I have when I have to do it.
Yeah.
Not a gramophone gig, because, right? Yeah. So they'll have like what I might have taken on the cruise, plus I do sessions now in my own house, which is convenient, because people can't really afford studio recording, but I have the ways to make it sound amazing just with the software and Pro Tools and on my buddy's laptop. So I record in my own home, which gives me the luxury of all the guitars that I love that are home, you know, and of course my collection of pedals, which thank God I got rid of about 40 recently. I did a little trade deal, but I didn't need any of them. So I'm pulling out stuff from the bag and I go like, oh yeah, we'll leave it. Where'd this one come from? You know what I mean? I'm like, I didn't know I had another one of these. And it's like a $200 Boss Delay, you know, vintage one. And then right, it took me about 5 minutes to figure out why I had it in the bag. Well, I just recently took it out of one of the pedal boards because the light was just a little too dim for the kind of lighting we keep getting, which washes it out. So my obsession with pedals, not only the fact that I do enjoy, you know, painting the tone when you have those opportunities to be creative with them, is backups and then function. They need to be functional. If that pedal sounds great and you can't tell if you turned it on or not because the light isn't bright enough, is it really being functional for you?
Sure.
Right. So the next thing I know, I'm like, wait a minute, they're a new reissue. I think it sounds as good enough. I can see the light on that. So then you get what I mean? So there's the upgrade and then I have the old one. And go on and on about gear.
Yeah.
I'm a gearhead.
A little bit about Union. Mm-hmm. Was a huge fan. We have a saying on our show. We call it perfectly rated, and it's how we describe most bands. And the the concept is, good or bad, huge or like, Van Halen is perfectly remembered, almost like how they should be. Mm-hmm. They are as popular as they are because of how good they are.
Right.
We're a band like, better example, I like Slayer more than Metallica. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I can clearly understand why Metallica is one of the biggest bands on the planet. There's just something different there. Mm-hmm. Union is a rare example for me that I actually think you're underappreciated, underrated.
No, I agree.
Two amazing records. Mm-hmm. And you kind of saw like the progression from, because you had a lot of input on Carnival of Souls. What was that whole, as a musician, what was the time like for you with Union and working with John Corabi?
Well, it was Larry Mazur who put me together with John, which was wonderful because when I asked Larry, what am I doing now? they chose Doc McGee anyway, so it wasn't like he got busy with Kiss. He
right.
went on to do managing, which he's still out there doing it. And Larry knew John very well. I knew of John, but I didn't know him personally. He said, you're gonna like him, and he's really talented. You know, he's East Coast guy, he's Philly. So we hooked up, and the chemistry was there right away, even though we're completely different personalities. You know, John with the tattoos and the freaking and everything, and the past 10 years kind of looking like a crazy homeless guy.
Yeah,
but that's a look. You know, he's still he's got a heart of gold, and our chemistry was great together, and we started writing and putting it together. Now I was starting from scratch there. That was hard. You got to remember, my years in Kiss were extremely. A bit of a bubble because, you know, you were defined by the band and the fame of the band and the luxuries of the band.
Yeah.
And now I had to leave the house. You know what I mean? I'm not, as much as I always like to say, and we know it's true, that I'm still part of the Kiss family, but I'm not in that bubble. I'm not in that inner circle. Mm-hmm. I'm not in the band anymore. You know, and of course they went on to these tremendous, success with it. Reunion tour, understandable. Thank God, and Eric and I still talk about it, Eric Singer and I, even though, of course, you know, he's had the longest tenure as a drummer past, in Kiss, and past Gene and Paul in numbers of years. We talk about how they paid us for a year, even though we weren't in the band.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that was certainly gave me plenty of time, a little kind of safety valve, to kind of safety net, really, to then find my next things, So within time, working with John, we started to be creative. I did look at a lot of material that didn't get chosen by Kiss to record as possible contributions for what could be Union music. The first song, Old Man Wise, was a riff that Gene really liked, and we were fooling around with it. We didn't do anything with it. But he thought, oh, that's great. You know, that down, bom, bom, bom.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been on Carnival of Souls.
Sure.
Especially if Gene tackled it. So I'm very proud of the band. All I could say is it was more the timing of that band. Once we had the band together, Brent and James, all really talented, I saw us as a combination of all the bands that we came from and just kind of being a creative take on all that. You know?
Did you guys do a full tour? I don't recall.
So we got some tour support. Yeah, I remember that we were only signed to an independent
Spitfire
label,
right?
Yeah, which was a new label. Mm-hmm. And we did get out there and do some gigs probably for a couple months. They were mostly the clubs and everything. The problem with that is, like, the first few promoters that get bullish and then they go, like, okay, yeah, we'll pay you X. And it's, like, decent money. And then if you three-quarter fill the place or half-fill the place. And
scale then, back a little bit.
And then next thing you know is the offers aren't that good. And how do you put the tour together? It would have been a lot better if we had an opportunity to use that money to maybe open up for a major artist on a you know, arena tour where we could really maybe maximize, you know, the people seeing it. Okay. So we didn't get a big break that way. We didn't get any real, we got some radio support, but we didn't get the big connection of radio support. Music was changing.
It was a weird time.
Yes.
I mean, like Limp Bizkit was coming around at that
exactly.
point. And
so music changed. It was the time for a lot of different stuff that we couldn't compete with. So I really do feel like we fell through the cracks. Anyway, we put out a couple of singles. You know, again, nothing big happened. I knew the band. You know, I always say to this day, and I know the fans that we have, and I'm not trying to make the band like some legendary, mysterious group and
whatever. It's
say,
a kick-ass
yeah,
band.
Yeah, that I was super proud of the music. I know that I can't even tell you how many times things that could have gone better fell way short.
Sure.
You know, to the point where I'd go like, ugh, the Black Cloud, you know, those kind of things. And it was very frustrating. But the one thing I don't see any Black Cloud over is the music that I left behind. I'm really very proud of it. Unfortunately, the record deal was grandfathered to other labels, and it didn't have to be, but there was a lot of business things too. You know, I mean, no band has a worse story than Grand Funk with the old, you know, Terry Knight days.
Oh yeah,
yeah. You know about that. Right?
I know the whole history with the tax thing.
So I'm not saying like Union suffered like that, but I'm just saying like when digital became evident, and I remember the guys would say to me like, "Hey, don't we own our records yet?" You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I had to look into it. I was the only one that kept any of the contracts or the paperwork or the stuff. And by the time I figured it out and I showed it to my manager lawyer friend, you know, we have no, they're not ours. It doesn't revert to us. Okay. So whoever, you know, and again, when it gets grandfathered six times watered down, meaning one label sold to another, and then that one goes out of business, but it all goes to another one. It's a joke. You know,
I think
ridiculous.
At a certain point, they're, if nobody's going to do anything with it, it should go back to the artist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for giving the artist more control. And we maybe will see that with the music industry changing. But
Well, now if you put out anything, generally the artist controls it. Because unless you're one of the bigger bands that a label gets the 360 deal and it makes sense for you because you're a bigger band, which means they have a part of the merchandise, the touring, the whole thing. But, yeah, by the time Union ended, I wanted to do my first solo record because I got so frustrated with all the roadblocks going down that road. And I remember saying at a pretty early time in this industry, like 99, 2000, if I got to sell it out of the trunk of my car.
Yeah.
You see, which meant the internet, really, which was still kind of not as big as it is now. And that's what I did. And I did very well with Audio Dog. I did very well with Transformer. By BK3, I did a record deal, although that label went out of business. So I had my positive parts of it and my negative parts of that. But this whole DIY approach is what everyone does now, except now you pre-sell the record, so you get a pledge music and, you know, you have to put it out that way. And that's been the disconnect about people like artists that you and I love and grew up with. Don't want to really put out a lot of new stuff because it's very hard.
It is disappointing because there has been some kind of like, older artists that have put out some great material in the last 15 years. And to kind of see that kind of just go by the wayside.
Even McCartney has put out some brilliant solo records in the past 10 years. Well, I get the convenience of streaming. I have a lot of fun with my Spotify and my Apple Music, and I pay, and I'll do the free versions. And I also see my royalties for things that actually got some activity and like, I might be able to buy lunch with it.
I was going to say.
I can't pay bills with it. So there you go.
That's one thing I've hammered on in a lot of my interviews. We have, especially for these newer bands, We have to find a way to get, there's clearly money in streaming, mm-hmm. and the only people that aren't getting it are the artists. Right. You know, Desmond Child said, like, 6 million streams of one of the Bon Jovi hits, right? Yeah. He had to split $120 yeah. with Richie Sambora. Yeah. Now, again, they're not hurting for money, but if that's what they're getting, you know, what is an up-and-coming band getting? But
no, the system is kind of askew, and I can't call it rigged because I don't know enough about it. I'm sure there are people who are aware of how the laws got passed, how it got enacted and controlled, that how they made their deals with the publishers and the mm-hmm. labels. But artists are being screwed royally. Okay. Now, I do like that Kiss fans like physical product. They also like their stuff signed. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. they like, and they still cherish their records.
Yeah.
And vinyl has value and things like that. But it's just so sad what's happened. And there's no collective way to fix it easily. I know I belong to the music union, but I always see articles about them trying to improve the streaming royalties.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens over time. The gift of our holiday song that I just filmed with Lisa that's on YouTube, you know, like, I don't expect to make any money from it. I do get some YouTube monetization or whatever mm-hmm. they call it from my TuneCore, which is how I, that's my label in a sense, you know,
yeah, sure.
I put my music out. But it is fascinating to see what will happen. You know, I don't know where it's all headed.
Well, let me wrap it up with probably the thing that everybody wanted me to talk to you about, anybody who's listening.
And we talked about so many other things.
I know. Trust me.
We didn't talk about my breakfast, my pancake and eggs.
I probably got through half of the questions okay. at best, but I definitely I got to talk to you about the Kiss Cruise because mm-hmm. You and your brother, of course, played on night one, and the internet blew up probably before you got off stage. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they got the word out.
I don't know. You're in the middle of an ocean, man.
Yeah, we're out there. Yeah.
But well, it was
actually maybe by the time we played, it was still we were. You know, it's funny on that cruise, which way went down the Mississippi and everything until you actually reach the Gulf of Mexico, which is where we were headed. I don't know if we, you know, maybe by the time we were out there, we were kind of just getting to the Gulf, you know, because remember, it took forever to kind of leave the port. And everything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so your question is?
How many people here on the Killers album tonight? We should have learned some songs from that record. Just kidding. Nowhere to run! Hey!
I was always voted as like, you know, when a six man who promotes it, you know, but it's really run by Kiss in conjunction with six man who really know how to do a cruise. You know, I would always come up as like, you know, well, who else would you like to see on the cruise? Cause you know, they already did six.
Yeah.
And my name, would always pop up like at the top of the, you know, the list. So I remember once Kiss looked at that and Paul and Gene, especially Paul, had this concept of let's call the cruise Kiss World, you know, instead of an album thing or whatever, because that's what some of the themes they were doing, right? I wasn't really aware of every cruise. You know, I just remember asking early on, Gene, people say, like, when are you doing the cruise? You know, this was probably in the second year. And he said, it's complicated. I knew what that meant. It's just like, well, and then he clarified it a little bit. Well, if we ask you, then what about the other former Kiss members? That's a good point. I get it. What can I say? You know, I can't tell them, well, don't have me because you may not have Ace, or you may not ask right. Peter, or you may not, whatever.
You know, from an outsider, I'll tell you this. I don't think the fans would feel that. I would understand why you, and not necessarily Ace, Peter, Vinny, or anybody else. You know what I mean? Just is what it is.
Yeah. But anyway, I let go of it and I didn't like really look at every cruise. But when I got the word through the people that I know that work with Kiss that, look, they want to ask you, you know, for Kiss Cruise 7 to be on the boat. I said, what would I do? We don't know yet. But there is a panel. So, you know, many of the conventions and expos, I don't mean necessarily the Kiss ones. I mean the comic book ones and everything. Even at the big one, what's that big one in San Diego? Comic-Con. What's very big is the actors and the artists and the creators to talk to the fans and do a panel. That's huge. You know, in fact, those people don't perform. Of course, they don't act on stage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, brilliant. Paul comes up with Kiss World. You know what I mean? And there it is. And we'll have Bruce. Let's ask Bob. Great. Right? Bob's got a great story to tell, and his you know, connection to Kiss is strong. Let's have John Hart, you know, who they're still friends with. I know that, even though he has worked for the band. Lydia Chris, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's right.
And then they wanted a producer. I remember them kicking around a few people. But I know that Michael James Jackson, who is the very – he's been asked to do interviews and everything. He always says no.
Yeah.
I've known Michael a long time, actually. We were friends for a while. But I knew he was friends with Paul and Gene, and especially close with Paul. And it was his girlfriend that said, you're doing it. You know, it was one of those things.
He was there.
Yeah, so Michael James Jackson was on.
Because I know what you mean by reclusive,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, and we had a good conversation about 3 weeks before the cruise, because he said, like, you know, I don't, you know, I love those guys. I love what I did with the band. I don't really ever talk about it, because, you know, he has that kind of point of view that's not as, you know, it's no big deal. It's not like he has something big in the future planned that he's keeping.
Sure.
You know, whatever. But I said, you got to go. It's going to be fun. You know, anyway. So there's the panel. But if they're going to invite Bob and I, who are real, you know, musicians and performers, how can we not play? So originally it was presented that I would play with Bob with the house band. And the house band is some talented guys. There are a few of them, I think, are in Gene's band. Okay. But it evolved from there, because once the discussion started to continue with Six Man and Kiss and my brother about, like, well, the house band – there was a lot of discussions, a lot of kicking around. In the end, I told Bob to really push for – he wanted to really push for Todd and Brett. I said, you have my blessings, absolutely. I would do it anyway. I don't know how we'd do the performance or how we'd – well, once we would have Todd and Brett, then it was like, okay, everybody, share your schedules. The next thing you know, we're rehearsing for 2 days in Vegas on a couple of days that worked for everyone's schedule. And it was pretty obvious to put together a killer set of – songs that, you know, that I'm known for, and songs that Bob's known for. So we had this, like, believe me, we could have done even more unusual songs, you know, obviously, because there were other tracks of Bob and from my catalog. But it really, what turned into probably my most, I would say that in some ways that gig was probably one of the highlights of my career, and also one of the highest pressure gigs that I had in many, many years. Like my first gig in Kiss, my knees were trembling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I definitely was, you couldn't have a more, you know, brighter spotlight of a performance that, first of all, the rehearsals were a month before the gig, okay, but we all had tapes of what we rehearsed, mm-hmm. practice. So it wasn't like we just came out of rehearsal that week. You know, Kiss goes on tour, usually they get together the week before.
Yeah.
You know
what I
mean? So there's that. There's the unknown of on a ship. There's
seasick
backline. Well, you know, fortunately the boat wasn't too bad, but you know, it wasn't, you know, the weather good. But what I'm saying is, yeah, the elements, you're outdoors, you're on the pool deck. But I was more concerned this backline, this monitors, this PA. We don't have light. We don't have a sound guy. We don't have a light. And then magically, thank you, outside of my brother unplugging himself twice, which I fixed very quickly. Everything worked, and the set was great, and the lights were amazing. And I want to thank, you know, Kiss and Six Man for doing that for us. The sound was amazing, and the gig came off amazing. And the fans were, some of them were crying. You know, what can I say? It was really one of my big moments. I know it meant a real lot for my brother, because I've been already in that Kiss light for many years.
Yeah.
Now, you know, doing things, and I've done some exciting gigs with tribute bands around the world. Okay, literally yeah. around the world. And some of them are really good, and we have a great crowd. My gig with Hairball here in Minneapolis was unbelievable.
Yeah.
The lights and sound and the crowd. It was a sold out theater, you know, that was packed. It was crazy. So I know my brother's done some gigs in Vegas that were fun. Not the Kiss cruise, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not that kind of reaction and feedback from the
That's
fans
awesome.
That you feel on stage. So I'm grateful for the YouTubes. I'm grateful for the fans and the reaction. And, you know, where it leads us, of course, everybody
That's
says,
the next question.
Yeah.
Is there going to be more?
Look.
You can play the Vinny. Oh, you're already busy at the Vinny Expo. You have but something like that.
No,
expo,
no.
Right?
It
like
could
a,
be an expo. And there's
You'd have a built-in audience.
Everything's been discussed. Nothing's been
planned. Oh, so you are.
Meaning, have some people come to us already to say, could you do this?
Mm-hmm.
And look, from November to December, not a great time to plan your 2018, I'll be honest. The music business kind of slows down a bit.
Oh, okay.
I have my Grand Funk gig, so I always have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
If I wasn't in Grand Funk and Todd and Brent were available as well, Bob and I could certainly figure out, all right, let's pick and choose the best thing that we could do, a chunk of something, you know, of touring. Unfortunately, because of Grand Funk, in the same way that it's always been a bit of a challenge for me to commit to things that are anything more than 2 or 3 weeks. It's hard for me to do all that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that couldn't happen. It also doesn't mean that we couldn't possibly record something or film something at a gig that we could share with everybody. Everything's possible. Let's see what happens. You know, it's been, the reaction's been wonderful. I also need to put it out there that sometimes I think it's a bit askew to, well, who loves it? Who loved what we did? Kiss me.
Yeah, right. It's a very specific audience.
Thank you. So,
yeah.
So you get that.
Yeah.
I know how important it is, and I know how wonderful it is, and I know how different it is, and how special it is, and I love that. Okay, love it. But most bands, like the people that said, you should do festivals, okay, and I'm not saying that the festivals wouldn't make an offer, or I couldn't approach them
mm-hmm.
about it, although they usually fall in time periods that are difficult for me.
Yeah.
But every band that plays at the festival is not concentric to just one thing, or, you know.
Very much give your point.
Who goes to the festivals? The bands that... fans that love all the bands that play there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying we wouldn't fit there, but it's not the same. Not, just next week, I'm going to have a conversation with somebody that I know he has some information for me, he'd like to talk to me. In other words, he knows that some people are making offers. I will be open to everything and anything. I will not say, you know, yes to everything. We're going to figure it out. I want to be careful with it. Think about it. How do you not poop on the magic gig?
Oh, absolutely.
How about if we were not careful and super hungry and just overly ambitious, possibly doing something that will fall way short of your expectations, that would be
mm-hmm.
very disappointing. I don't want that to happen either. So I don't know how to make – I'm not saying it's going to be easy to match a Kiss cruise, because you can't have a more perfect experience. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I got to be careful of that too. So all those things are in schedule, what makes the best sense, not going down the wrong road with it and making sure that it fits, okay, the equation of what I feel would be appropriate for us. So let's see what happens.
Right on. So, well, obviously with the internet now, everybody's going to find out probably about the same time you do, it seems like. So
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Bruce.
How soon will this be shared with
you? Within the next few days.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. So then we can do a quick follow-up of the any potential gigs, of course, for Bruce and Bob and Brent and Todd, and then, of course, what happened in Atlanta.
Yeah. Any type of news that we can attach to sharing anything we do, we'll throw it out there, you know. Right. Your interview with us, the initial one a few years back, mm-hmm. is, I think, our most heavily streamed and downloaded episode. Okay. So anytime, like, we dabble on – we're both KISS fans, but mm-hmm. we don't specific
– right.
Anytime we do venture in there, we see a spike in numbers.
Yeah, cool.
The nerds come out and support it. But
we love the I know the KISS fans are just, you know, desperate for information.
Double-edged sword sometimes, huh?
Yeah. Well, I will mention, since we're doing this on the last day of 2017.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Even though you're going to share it at the top of 2018, I want to wish everyone, of course, a wonderful new year, and may all your dreams and wishes come true. And just know that I'm very blessed. I've had a wonderful year. I'm hoping to do a lot more of the same. Mm-hmm. All the exciting things I did in 17, from offering a guitar model on a limited basis to a cruise to going back to Scandinavia to performing with my wife, to recording with my wife, to hopefully doing a lot of the same, new music from me, doing more sessions, you know, more of the same, more exciting Grand Funk gigs, because that's been keeping me very busy on the road. I got a lot of frequent flyer miles. Thank you, Delta and American Airlines. And I do hope that the KISS fans will continue that nostalgic love of the non-makeup era, because believe me, it fuels me. I love it. It's amazing. I see new pictures every week. Some fan, I met you backstage. Look at the picture. I finally scanned it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, nowadays you can take a pretty good picture with your phone.
No kidding.
You know, so I just want to wrap it up saying thank you to all of them, because if I only knew back then how important it would be over 30 years later, you know, maybe I wouldn't have been able to leave my house.
appreciate your time.
Well, it's always nice when I don't have to go anywhere.
That's right.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.